Hello, welcome to F1 Explains. This is the official Formula One podcast that is put on this earth to explain the sport we all love. My name is Christian Hugill. Alongside me, as always, is Katie Osborne. And pretty much all the questions we answer on this podcast are sent in from our amazing listeners all over the world. You can email f1explains@f1.com. You can write us some words in a good old-fashioned email, or you can send us a voice note.
Hi, Christian and Katie. This is Sarah from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I recently got into F1, and your podcast has been really helpful in getting me up to speed. My question for you is, can you tell us more about how drivers become F1 drivers? We often hear they've won F2 or F3 championships in the past, but how do these lower levels work? Do they follow the same schedule as Formula One? Do they have the same cars or drive for the same teams? And why do rookies who win in F2 sometimes struggle to get points when they start out in F1?
Sarah, thank you. And it is a great question. And I know a lot of people have asked about F2 and F3. We've also received questions from Emily in Nashville, Tennessee.
Bogdan in Romania.
Marissa in Germany.
Andrew in Malaysia.
Gina in Texas.
Toby in Sicily.
And also Nua, who is from, we don't know, seeing it. And
we don't know where Nua's from. Nua, let us know where you're from. But that great big list of people all asked questions about Formula 3 and Formula 2. And I'm sure there were more in the F1 Explains inbox. But that's enough for us to be getting on with, isn't it, Katie?
That's right. Now, Christian, I'm a very visual person, right? So when you kind of envision what Formula 1 is all about, and then you kind of picture a ladder system, F1 is clearly there at the top. F2 and F3 are the rungs kind of below that. There are some big differences, though, between F1 and the other categories.
Yeah, but they also have a lot in common, and that makes Formula 2 and Formula 3 the perfect place for aspiring Formula 1 drivers to make their names.
Driving to the line side by side, crossing the line to take seventh place, Oscar Piastri is the 2020 FIA Formula 3 champion.
Yeah!
What? All right, mate.
Luca Giotto's over the door, and Charles Leclerc takes the lead. He's passed absolutely everyone to get himself back to the front.
Wow.
I barely have the words to convey how fantastic that has been to watch Charles Leclerc make it work.
Yes! Yes!
Champion of GP3 in 2017, Williams Formula One driver of 2019, and in between, he has conquered a super talented field. He wins for the seventh time in 2018, and George Russell is the Formula Two champion of 2018. Oscar Piastri wins the Formula 2 Championship of 2021. Three titles in a row for the Australian driver. Formula Renault, Formula 3, and now Formula 2, F1. Sign him up.
And a little side note here, Charles Leclerc, Oscar Piastri, and George Russell all won F3 and F2 in consecutive years. I think that's a really good stat to have as you kind of think about where they are in F1 now.
It's a great stat to have and certainly an indicator of a special talent, but they are not the only drivers on the current F1 grid who are F2 and F3 graduates. You can also include Zhou Guan Yu, Alex Albon, Lando Norris, Logan Sargeant, to name but a few.
Yeah, but you know what? Who is not one in this rung on this ladder system is Max Verstappen. He jumped up from a different racing series straight to F1 when he was just like 17 years old. And in the States, he just became old enough to drive a vehicle on the roads, which I think is just amazing.
And the UK too. In fact, I'm fairly sure he could drive a Formula One car before, your producer Chris is nodding at me, he could drive a Formula One car before he could drive a road car. Now, Formula 3 and Formula 2 used to be called GP3 and GP2. So if you've been following the sport for a little longer, if you're not quite as new to the sport, then that might be the name you're used to. Former champions of that series include Lewis Hamilton, Pierre Gasly, Valtteri Bottas, Esteban Ocon, Nico Hülkenberg, Nico Rosberg, and our friend on this podcast, Mr. Jolyon Palmer. And coming up, we will hear from one of those champions. Former F3 and F2 champion Oscar Piastri is on the way in this very episode. We couldn't think of a better person to answer some of that big list of questions we had at the start than a man who's won both series.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. One thing I think is interesting too, Christian, as a side note here again, is that all of these drivers that we know within F1, most of them have competed with each other along the way up to their journey into F1. And I find it really interesting that they could be friends off track. On track, though, they know what these drivers are going to do. They know how they're going to respond, how they're going to react. I think that's kind of a fun thing just to consider, that some of these drivers have been around racing one another for their entire careers. Is that interesting to you?
Hugely interesting. And it's not just F3 and F2, or in the old days, GP3 and GP2. A lot of them have been racing together since karting. There are pictures of George Russell and Alex Albon in the current crop together. I was about to say looking like children, but that's literally because they were children.
They were children.
Actual children racing together in cars. So yeah, particularly the sort of rookie crop of 2019, the Russell Albon group, they've known each other for a long time since karting, a lot of those guys.
Those are some of my favorite photos on social media when F1 posts the throwbacks of these drivers.
I bet they love it.
They're just so cute, some of them. Anyways, you know, I think F2 and F3 is a great place for obviously these drivers to make a name into F1, but it's also a great place for others to get involved in Formula One in a different level as well and build their way up into Formula One. And I'm kind of leaning into Alex Jakes, who we all very much know and love on F1 TV, but he made a name for himself in F3 and F2 as a commentator before he did start doing F1.
Yeah, Alex, as you say, Katie, is now the voice of Formula One on F1 TV, providing commentary on the races all over the world. As you say, started in Formula 3 and Formula 2, still commentates on Formula 2 to this day. And Katie and I joined Alex in his favourite place in the world, in a commentary box, to run through the basics of Formula 3 and Formula 2. Alex Jakes, for your, well, third appearance on F1 Explains, a very warm welcome back.
We're glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. This time in person.
Yes, this is so nice.
And in Alex's natural home, a commentary box. As we know, this week we are talking about Formula 2 and Formula 3 here on F1 Explains. A little bit later, we'll be hearing from a man who's won both of those titles, Oscar Piastri. But Alex, you've commentated on both series for many years. Let's start with the very basics for newer fans who might not be too aware of the series. What is Formula 2 and what is Formula 3?
So Formula 3 and Formula 2 are rungs on the ladder to Formula 1. They exist for talent to prove what they can do behind the wheel. Identical cars. Formula 3 has a grid of 30 cars. Formula 2 can vary, but it's got a grid of 22 cars. They're championships for the drivers before they get to Formula 1.
I think it's also safe to say Formula 3 and Formula 2 really do set the stage. They are the feeder program. They are the ways into Formula 1 as a whole. And some would say, hey, is there a way to get into Formula 1 without going into F2, F3?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. That's the ladder up.
You have to climb the ladder and you have to perform on the Grand Prix weekend as well, which is why Formula 3 is on the Grand Prix weekend. It's why Formula 2 races as well. So you get used to the environment that you're heading to, hopefully, if it all goes to plan.
And historically, there have been drivers in Formula 1 going through the years that didn't race in the feeder series, because Formula 3's had various different names over the years. Again, some of our listeners who followed Formula 1 for years might know F2 under its old name GP2, but it does feel nowadays, doesn't it, that the huge majority of Formula 1 drivers go through these series.
So broader picture in the past, you used to be able, say, 20, 30 years ago, you could take a different route. There were different championships. In the last decade, it has narrowed down. Some of those championships don't exist anymore. You wouldn't get a driver maybe make a sideways move from touring cars like we saw in the past with Paul di Resta or Esteban Ocon. Every driver you're going to hear the name of now in Formula 1 is going to have gone through at least Formula 3.
Another conversation piece that might pop up for someone is saying, hey, we saw this driver jump from F3 to F2, but they didn't win. So how does that happen?
You have to bring a budget, let's be honest about it. Motor racing is expensive, but you're not going to get into the front running teams in Formula 2 unless you have a strong case and a strong performance. You've got to be in the upper echelons of the championship to get a car that can compete in Formula 2. So you can be outside that top 10, bring a whole load of budget, but you're not going to be with the best teams that have the history of taking drivers through into Formula One. So there is that distinction. You've got to perform. It's as simple as that. It's a results-based business. You've got to perform at some point. Even if you jump a ladder through budget, you are still going to have to eventually perform behind the wheel.
Is it 1 year in each?
Yes. The super license points that you get for winning the championships would give you the super license and the ability to race in Formula One.
A couple of points to pick up on there. For any of our listeners who aren't sure, what is a super license?
You cannot race in Formula One without it. It is basically your card to go racing at the pinnacle of motor racing.
And another key difference between Formula 2, Formula 3 and Formula 1 is that the cars are identical in Formula 3 and Formula 2.
Yes.
However, you just said there that you're not going to win the championship unless you're in one of the front-running teams. How does a team become a front-running team or a not front-running team if all the cars are exactly the same, unlike Formula 1?
Yes.
Where, of course, Red Bull have built a much quicker car than Williams because, you know, they have bigger budget and for various many reasons.
So everyone gets the same chassis, everyone gets the same tyres, everyone gets the same power unit. Differs between Formula 3 and Formula 2. But there is a difference in engineering. There is a difference in knowledge. There is a difference in mechanics. Only 12 people can work on the car to keep the costs down. But there are always going to be differences between the knowledge, the know-how, the experience, and the ability of the engineers. And that's what makes one team potentially a better bet to be with, even though the machinery is identical.
And that's where that money pays off. You can pay the higher dollars for the more experience. And
yes, you can. For example, let's give you some names behind this. ART, a team run originally by now Ferrari team principal Fred Vasseur, a team responsible for taking through into Formula One Nico Rosberg, Lewis Hamilton, started their careers there. Always a front-running team because of the knowledge and the know-how. Then you get the track record. Then all the prospects go, I want to be with that team. There's another one called Prema that we've just seen a title win for Prema in F1 Academy with Marta Garcia. They're just proven at every single level of motorsport. They've won every single time. And so if you're a good karting prospect and you've made your way through the junior ranks before Formula 3 and Formula 2, you're like, they're the team that I want to be on. And therefore, success breeds success. The hot shots end up in the traditional names.
Success breeds success. Isn't that the truth in motorsport?
That is the truth in motorsport. Let's get on to some of our listener questions. As always, we get so many questions to this podcast, and you can send yours. That is what Emily in Nashville, Tennessee did. She would like to ask you, Alex Jakes, what are the biggest differences between F3, F2 and F1 weekends in terms of the way the weekends work?
Well, the format for Formula 3 and for Formula 2 is different. You get one practice session, and then you are into qualifying. Qualifying is half an hour. So practice is 45 minutes. Qualifying is half an hour. There's no limit. There's no knockout. There's no segments. It's 30 minutes. Set your time. And that's the nature of it. Then you get a reverse grid race, which pays less points in both Formula 3 and Formula 2. Into Sunday, that is your major points paying race. That is, you line up how you qualify on the Friday. And that is your F1 style points. It's been changed in recent years because we have a sprint race and a feature race. The sprint race used to carry a few more points, and then it was felt that, listen, the race that is really important, the race where we should see the major points handed out, is the sprint. That's a longer one. For Formula 2, for example, they race for an hour, and that is 25 points for a win, and basically you're not winning the title unless you're performing on a Sunday.
F2 and F3 teams have relationships with those F1 teams. How does that work? You kind of explained a little of that already.
Yeah, so most Formula 1 teams will have a driver development program. They're called different things, but that's essentially what they've got. It is an early option on the talent. It is okay, they look good. We're going to have them race in our colours. We're going to have a little bit of funding for them because, again, motor racing is expensive. And we're going to get them in the team environment and show them what they will need to do. So the programs, for example, McLaren is the greatest example with Lewis Hamilton. They signed him up super early. They had him in go-karts. They had him all the way through. They gave him funding that wouldn't have been available to him. And then as a result, we got a 7-time champion of the world. Without that backing from McLaren, he wouldn't have made Formula One.
Does a story like that happen as often now? Just as a quick sidebar, do we see these teams scouting as early as we did back then?
Not in the same way. The driver has a big responsibility to put themselves in the shop window. No one is going to hand you anything. Even there are so many times that you will hear from a family, my kid is great in karting.
Sure.
And there are hundreds of kids who are great in karting. You've got to make a case for yourself. You've got to get in the shop window. Lewis Hamilton went up to Ron Dennis at the Autosport Awards and said, I'd like to drive for you one day, then had the results to back up for it. But if he doesn't do that, then McLaren maybe go for another prospect. They maybe go for another. There are lots of very talented drivers at that point. He made a case for himself and he backed it up with the results.
Well, bringing in Andrew from Malaysia's question, he says, how do F3 and F2 teams find their drivers? Touching on that.
Yeah, so you would know the prospects that are coming through karting. There would be a member of the Formula One team in charge of the academy or the driver development program, and their entire job is to know who is best coming up through the ranks, so that when you get to Formula 3, the driver that is representing your team, that is in your driver development program, has a pedigree and has a track record before they've even got to Formula 3. It is a strange thing, and it's worth taking a tiny step back here and going, the drivers, I asked Alex Brundle once, okay, so when did you feel the pressure of, okay, I've got Brundle as a surname, I know that I've got a route to the top, when do you feel that pressure? And he said the first time he said in a go-kart. Yeah. And the drivers who know that they have a bit of funding and have a chance to get through, know they have an opportunity to get on F1 team's radar because they're scouting all the karting championships from their very first race. And that is the inbuilt pressure of making it to the top of motorsport via Formula 3 and Formula 2.
Well, that's a really great segue into Sarah from Indianapolis. Her question of why do some drivers who win in F2 and F3 struggle when they hit F1? And whether it's the pressure cooker and all of a sudden it pops off and they are now at the biggest stage and they can't handle it, right? Or they've been going so long and there's a burnout, or perhaps it's just the difference. They're so used to having everything kind of the same that now they really have to show their performance within a car that is also very different than what they've driven before. What is it? What is the
There's
kicker?
A short answer and there's a long answer. The short answer is motor racing at the top end is hard and you have to be exceptional. You have to be almost superhuman. I remember speaking to Yuki Tsunoda when he went from a Formula 2 car. He'd been in the championship for one season. He'd been a race winner, being competitive every single weekend that he turned up in Formula 2. He'd been really impressive. And then he went to his AlphaTauri test and he said it was like another language. Suddenly, you've got to make adjustments. You're not just driving like you have done instinctively. You're having to make adjustments every corner of every lap in a superhuman way. And you can be an amazing driver in Formula 3. And then suddenly, the Formula 2 car is more powerful. It has more aerodynamic performance. It has more grip. So can you do what you've done before at higher speed? That's a question that some are able to answer. And then if you're able to break through into Formula One, and it is hard, some great drivers never get the opportunity. Timing and luck is still a massive part of it, along with budget. You get to Formula One, then you've got to be making that change every single lap, every single corner. You've got to be almost superhuman in your ability to work with the team, to tell them as a rookie what you want. And some drivers can get lost. Some drivers can get lost through setup. Some drivers can get lost through communication. And some ultimately were capable of pushing a car with 650 horsepower, but not capable of pushing one with 1,000. And the great thing about Formula One is there are lots of prospects, and it's the adaptability that Formula One teams value so highly in this modern era.
And switching from on track to off it, and speaking of adapting, Bogdan in Romania and Marissa from Germany both sent us the same question. They want to know how F2 and F3 share the F1 pit lane.
Yes, that is a fun little dance that they do before every session. So we're at the 20th and final corner here in Austin, and all the support races that run here queue up outside because you share the pit lane. The teams usually have a support race paddock behind the actual F1 paddock. They have quad bikes that they have to take along with all of the tyres to the pit lane, and then the drivers, they drive out onto the circuit about halfway round, and it is completely random which team garage they will line up in front of. It's usually, we're talking about the connection between team principals of Formula One teams and Formula Two teams. It's usually an old friendship or maybe a hotshot driver who's part of the academy. Charles Leclerc, for example, was in front of Ferrari when he was racing. And then they toddle around the circuit. They park up in the pit lane. At the end, they toddle back round to the support race paddock.
It's a little song and dance.
A little shuffle.
A little song and dance. Now, you have already mentioned Oscar in the conversation, and he's such a great example of this F3, F2. We are going to talk to him in just a little bit, but what are some of the memories of watching him along the way in his course of his career and now to see him be so successful here in Formula One?
I remember speaking to one of my old commentating partners, Davide Valsecchi, about who do you rate coming up through the ladder. And I think we were talking about F2 drivers for that year. And he said, Piastri. I was like, Piastri's racing in Formula 3. He's like, don't worry about Formula 2 this year, Piastri. And it's because he'd seen his ability in a wet race. And he'd just had that instinct. Well, the instinct is one thing. I think what marks Oscar out from other recent champions, brilliant as they are, you don't win a title without being a phenomenal driver. But what marks him out is that adaptability. Formula 3, he won in a 70-day season in the pandemic year, which was relentless. So you just had to adapt with the highs and the lows. He doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low. He's got a great mentality for a driver of his age and has always carried that with him. And then in Formula 2, he had the complete opposite. He had a massively extended season that went on for ages. And we tried a slightly different format that was so popular that we binned it immediately. So he was able to cope with 70 days, and he was able to cope for very nearly a 7-month season. And that adaptability, the ability to communicate well with the team, to ask exactly what you want for, and ultimately deliver pole positions and wins constantly against some very talented opposition drivers.
As we know, Formula One is growing. The viewership is growing. Why should someone tune into the F2, F3 series? Why would you say?
You should watch Formula 3 and Formula 2 because it is like seeing a band before they get big. You get to see elements of the driver's skill and ability that you will then later see in Formula 1. First and foremost, it is some of the best motor racing in the world. And as a bonus, you get to find out that, yeah, I'm not surprised that Charles Leclerc has been able to do that for Ferrari, because I saw him do that in Formula 3 and Formula 2. I'm not surprised that George Russell can cope with having Lewis Hamilton as a teammate, because I saw the way that he won the title in Formula 2. It is wonderful watching those drivers develop into the megastars that they become. And it's also a very fun way to spend your time on a Saturday and a Sunday.
Alex Jakes, commentator extraordinaire, we hugely appreciate your time, as always, on F1 Explains. We're recording it at the United States Grand Prix. So what a good opportunity to go and speak to Oscar Piastri. Should we go and find him?
I think that's a great idea.
Oscar Piastri, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Real quick, big picture, how did F2, F3 influence your life?
I mean, it's how I got into Formula One. The sort of pathway starts earlier than that. It starts in go-karts, of course, and then Formula 4, Formula 3, Formula 2. But yeah, without the success and knowledge I gained in F3 and F2, I wouldn't be in F1. So yeah, very important.
You did rather well in F3 and 2, didn't you? It's quite a good record.
It was a good couple of years, definitely. Yeah.
There was a similarity there in that you were just winning it all. So in that sense, it was all exactly the same. But what were the differences between a Formula 3 car going into a Formula 2 car, then into a Formula 1 car?
Okay, so from F3 to F2, I guess the headline is, of course, the lap time difference. It's probably 4 or 5 seconds quicker in F2. But the cars are quite different. So F2 car is, I think, about 100 kilos heavier. The power unit, the engine, is has a lot more power. I think F3's got about 380, 400 horsepower. F2's got 650. F2 has a turbo as well, which really changes the sort of way the power is delivered. And I think probably the biggest difference from F3 to F2 in terms of the actual car is the brakes. So in F3, you've got steel brakes, which are pretty user-friendly, don't really have any nasty surprises. Carbon brakes on F2, which have a lot of nasty surprises. So carbon brakes don't work at all when they're cold.
Ideal.
Yep. So you have to spend a lot of time you gain experience in getting them in the right temperature window. In things like safety cars, when it's wet, that can really catch you out. Almost caught me out a couple of times in F2. But that's probably the biggest difference to get used to from F3 to F2 is the brakes.
And one of the things you kind of can take a look back and say, sure, F1 cars are probably the toughest to drive, but sometimes, like in sports, sometimes in minor league baseball, it is more of a grind to be in minor leagues than in major leagues. Did you see that about the progression of the car, or is F3, F2 cars sometimes harder to drive than an F1 car?
It's just very, it's quite different, which is a bit weird, I guess, for people listening, because they look very similar. But the biggest difference from all the junior cars, including F3 and F2, to F1 is there's no power steering in the junior cars. So you kind of spend your whole junior career trying to get your arms and shoulders as strong as possossible. And then you get to F1 and it's actually quite easy on your arms. But where it's much more difficult is the races in F1 compared to an F3 race are three, sometimes four times as long. The G-forces are probably double an F3 car.
Yeah, so that neck strength then at that point.
Yes, so your neck takes a much harder time than F3 and F2. And that's by far the biggest difference. Also, the cardio ability you need in F1 is much more because of the G-forces just crushing your body and also because the race is so long.
In terms of the Formula One car, we're in an era now in Formula One where tyres are so important. And I've heard a lot of people say for rookies, obviously 2023 was your rookie year, that it's difficult to get Formula One cars in the right, what we call operating window. So making sure the tyres are hot enough without being too hot. Was that the same in F2 and F3? Or is that one of the areas where you mentioned steering was a bit easier? Is that more difficult about Formula One?
Again, it's quite different. So in F3 and F2, there's no tyre blankets. So they're whatever temperature it is outside, that's what they start at. And it's actually quite a process to warm them up properly, because if you warm them up too quickly, you can warm up the surface of the tyres a lot, but the sort of core temperature of the tyres can be too cold. So trying to do that is quite a big learning process. In F1, it's a similar kind of thing, but it's much more about trying to keep the tyres in a good window for the whole qualifying lap or the race in particular. And I think the biggest difference is in an F2 race, for example, you've got a pit stop, but your sort of softer tyres that are in the race have to last 6 or 7 laps, and that's it. In an F1 race, you know, we've got, 56 laps here this weekend? You've got to do, you know, at least 20 laps on both sets of tyres, and obviously the other one, you've got to do over 30 laps on. So that's a very different kind of tyre management, but it definitely presents its own challenges.
And Oscar, thank you for answering that question. That was the question of Nua, who emailed us. Nua, thank you for your question. You can email us with your questions and we put them to Formula One drivers. We're good like that, aren't we, Katie?
So good. So good. We just bring them right here to the table. Anyways, we've talked about the technical details of the differences and we talked about the physical details. What are some of the mental challenges about the jump from F3, F2 up to F1?
Yeah, I think in F3 and F2, of course, you're trying to prove to everybody why you should be in F1.
Oh, dang, that is hard. That's like draining to have to be in a proving grounds at all times.
Yes, exactly. And I think there's also pressure to do it quickly in F3 and F2 as well. You know, it's quite rare that you see people doing more than two or three seasons in Formula 3 and Formula 2. And I guess a decent way of judging if somebody's going to be successful in F1 is whether they can be successful, but also how quickly they can be successful.
How would you judge your success, by the way, in that one? Just curious.
Well, it was good. I'm not the only person to do it that quickly, though.
Okay. We should see a very successful Oscar Piastri.
He's not done bad, has he? Let's be honest.
Yeah, myself, Charles, and George did them back to back. But there is genuine pressure to do it as quickly as you can. And you want to stay in the spotlight and kind of ride the momentum you've got. So that's, you know, quite a difficult feeling. And also because of, you know, for a lot of people, there's a lot of financial pressure. Through the junior categories, it's often sponsors or, in a lot of cases, families backing the drivers. And that money doesn't come from nowhere, and it's quite a lot. And then, of course, when you get into Formula One, it's very different. You get paid.
That's nice, huh?
It is nice, yep.
That's a change.
It's a very different kind of thing. But then, of course, the spotlight on you in F1, the media attention, the fan attention is much, much higher.
Well, I was going to talk about that because off track, there must be a big adjustment too. So surely, well, you tell me, is there more things like engineering meetings, more stuff to get your head round, and even more of this sort of thing, people boring you with podcast interviews
okay,
and that sort of
that,
thing?
Right? This ain't that bad?
No, this is good.
Thank you. You're very kind. But it's, and presumably that is stuff to get your head round. Is there just more stuff for you to think about as a racing driver in F1 than there is in F2 and 3?
Oh, definitely. I think for me, probably the biggest difference is the off-track stuff from F2 to F1. And also, the year I did F2, we had 8 race weekends. It's now, I think, 14 for them. But in F1, we've got 24, so there's a lot more weekends. But also, you know, I said before that you get paid in F1. But
lovely.
Again, that money doesn't come from nowhere.
Yeah, right.
You know, we've got a lot of partners that support us, that are the reason we were able to go racing, that help fund the team and get cars on the grid. So that's a very different aspect. And working with these partners, speaking to them, also the media as well. You know, I had a few interviews in F2 especially, but you know, certainly not as much as I do in F1.
You're very good at them.
Yeah,
thank you.
No, it's
thank
very
you.
Enjoyable.
I try.
Mm. Yeah, very
it's
nice.
Probably in my best interest to try and come across well.
You do decent, Adam. Yeah.
But the engineering side of things is relatively similar, I would say.
Okay.
It's just that there's a lot more other stuff around that that you've got to factor into.
Yeah, I think it would be a really hard jump mentally, emotionally, physically to do all of the things. But yeah, you do have expectations as a driver now in Formula One that you really have to lean into, regardless if you want to or not. But it comes with that paycheck, like you're saying.
Exactly. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, see us on TV driving and you know, that's kind of it. But we're incredibly busy throughout the race weekends. But also away from the race weekends, we're, you know, doing our preparation on the simulator, talking with the engineers, but you know, also we're doing you know, all the funny videos that you see.
Yeah, you guys are really clever. Clever.
They don't come out of nowhere either. So, you know, there's time spent doing that, time spent with our partners as well, and sponsors away from the track. And when you've got, you know, 24 race weekends, you know, you end up with a lot less free time than you're used to.
Just to take it back on track.
Yep.
How helpful is F3 and F2 as a practice ground for, obviously, you guys all in those series are trying to get to Formula One. But in terms of on-track racing, because you then, after winning F2, you had a year as Alpine's reserve driver. But I'm guessing you were sort of, the minute you got back in a Formula One car, trying to remember what it's like to go wheel-to-wheel racing. And how helpful was that in F3 and F2 as that practice almost in wheel-to-wheel racing?
Yeah, definitely. I think that was probably one of the sort of biggest things I had to relearn at the start of this season was, as weird as this sounds, just being around other cars again. You know, and not just any cars, the fastest cars in the world.
Good cars.
And quite decent. Good drivers too, that don't make life easy for you. So, you know, the preparation from F3 and F2 was incredibly important in that. And I felt like I, you know, definitely lacked a little bit when I came into F1 after being reserve driver for a year. So it definitely helps. And also just with the tyres, they're quite similar. Obviously, they're all on Pirelli tyres. So you learn a lot about the sort of management of stuff, the stuff about managing race weekends, about managing the pressure of a championship as well, and trying to impress people and prove why you should be in Formula One. All of that kind of stuff prepares you very much for when you get to F1.
I do have a serious question about something, but most importantly, in F1, do you get dropped while you're having an interview, what looks like a glass of milk? Did you get that in F2, F3? Is that a normal thing? What is that, by the way?
I did not. It's a banana smoothie.
Oh.
So it's
that
not,
is not what I would have guessed
if
that
you
is.
You notice why Katie laughed. It's because this random glass of liquid just got dropped in the middle of the interview.
And nobody else got any, by the way.
No. So did that happen in F2 and F3? Is that a difference? Do people bring you random fruit-based drinks?
That is a difference. I'm sure if I had have asked in F3 and F2, I could have got it. But now it kind of just appears in front of me.
How important is a banana smoothie to the preparation of a Formula One driver?
Very good for the soul.
Yes, good. Love that.
Yes, that's probably... I mean, it's got nutritional benefits as well. But it's very important to keep the stomach and taste buds happy.
Yeah, there
weekend.
You go.
I've never asked an F1 driver that question before.
I'm glad
before.
We got the
That's
answer
a new
to that.
Thing. I might
really
ask it again in the future.
The, yeah, got the answer to that. My question was, is obviously F3, F2 had a big impact in your life. Do you have any, now being in Formula One, have any expectation of yourself or interest in the give back to F2, F3 for those who are going to be coming up the ranks?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm, of course, got a lot of all of my focus on trying to establish myself as a driver in Formula One and get the best out of myself. But definitely longer term, I know how difficult and also expensive coming up through the junior ranks is. And it'd be genuinely very nice to be able to help drivers, whether that's collectively or specific people. I think it would be a very nice thing to be able to do and contribute to in the future. So, it's an essential. You can't get to Formula One without going through F3 and F2, and for a lot of people, it's not easy to make that happen. So, be nice to contribute to that in the future.
Oscar, just finally before we let you go, you obviously won F3, you won F2. Are you deliberately leaving it a year or two at least before you win F1 to avoid, coming across as quite big-headed, really?
If I had the opportunity to win in my first year, I definitely would have tried. We've won a sprint race, so we've
exactly.
we're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got some good momentum.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Yeah. I'm trying my best. I think
you're doing rather well at it as well, I would
That's
suggest.
That's all you could ask for out of an F1 driver. Just trying your best.
Exactly. And the car is obviously a very important part of Formula One, and another difference to F3 and F2. In F3 and F2, everyone gets given the same car by Dallara. In F1, obviously, every team makes their own car. But that's obviously a very important part in their success. But what doesn't change is, I guess, your drive to try and get the most out of it. The dedication to try and make that happen is still the same.
Oscar, thank you for joining us on F1 Explains. We've got to let you go because that banana smoothie's not going to drink itself, is it?
No, exactly.
It's not going to be a smoothie. It'll be hot by the end of this
day. It will be hot.
In the Texas sun.
It's definitely had some ice in there as well. So
okay,
I'm good.
Thanks,
thank
Oscar.
You.
Thank you for your time. What a good time that was, Christian, with Oscar. And you know what's so cool to me is that every time now I think of a banana smoothie, I will think of Oscar Piastri.
Yeah, and Katie, I tell you what it made me think. I'd just like to get to a point in my life where someone brings me a banana smoothie when it feels quite warm. It's just, you've made it then, don't you? And producer Chris is shaking his head as if to say that won't be me, which I think's personally a shame. But that you've made it, don't you?
I just want to know, has there been anybody else out there who's just gotten a banana smoothie and not a strawberry banana smoothie and not a chocolate banana smoothie or like a peanut butter banana smoothie? That was a kicker to me. It was just a simple banana smoothie. Anyways, that was a joy and a treat to talk with Oscar and Alex. Highlights from both. Any takeaways?
Yeah, Alex's supreme knowledge of both series is fantastic. And we appreciate there's a lot of Formula One to watch over the course of a Formula One weekend. Alex's point about seeing a band before they've come famous is perfect, because if you've got a bit more time in your weekend to sit and watch F3 and F2, it's so great to sit and watch and gain your own understanding of, that person looks quick, that person's doing well, seeing that talent shine through, it's perfect. And obviously, Oscar's just such a talent. Nothing shows talent of racing drivers like the ability to win. And Oscar, as we said at the start of the episode, the latest in a line of people who've won both championships back to back. And that is a supreme sign of talent in a series where, as we've just learned, Katie, the cars are fundamentally the same. They have setup and technical differences, but they're fundamentally the same car. That's a proper sign of talent.
Yeah, no, there's so much good about what Oscar has shown on track in F1. You're going to continue to see him blossom on track, and I think that's going to be really cool here into the 2024 season.
Absolutely. And if you want to watch Formula 2 and Formula 3 this season, go to F1.com. You can click on F2 or F3 at the top of the page for the latest news and race calendars. If you have F1 TV, you can watch F2 and F3 highlights of every session there. And also, Formula One's global broadcast partners around the world, a lot of them do carry live coverage of Formula 2 and Formula 3 races. Again, details of all of that on those websites.
Well, and of course, you want some more bite-sized F2 and F3.
there is an awesome doc series on F2. It's called Chasing the Dream, and you can watch that on the F1 YouTube channel. And of course, like, that kind of takes a dive into these personalities and who they are and why. Why should you follow and cheer them on and root them on? Chasing the Dream kind of gives you that inside scoop.
Yeah, and that's on the Formula One YouTube channel. There's also F2 and F3 across all the various different social media channels, so you can keep up there. Now, before we go, pretty much every question we ever answer on this podcast is sent by a Formula One fan from around the world. If you're new to Formula One, or if you've been watching for decades and frankly just want to know a little bit more, get in touch with us and we will put your question to an expert. We want more emails, we want more voice notes. The address is f1explains@f1.com.
You can also follow and subscribe to F1 Explains. Write us a review, share the podcast with a friend, maybe somebody who just likes racing and you really want to take them further into the world of F1, or perhaps, you know, somebody who likes understanding athletes and the personalities. And I think, you know, F1 Explains helps takes a dive into that as well.
F1explains@f1.com is also the email address to let us know if you've ever had just a banana smoothie with nothing else in it. We'd like to know, please. F1explains@f1.com. And on that note, we'll be back next week. Bye for me, Christian Hugill. Katie Osborne, bye-bye.
Bye, pal.